My name is John Lindsay Poland. I work for the Fellowship of Reconciliation. What I'd like to talk about a little bit is the testing that's been done of chemical agents that has used human subjects in order to figure out better how weapons work or how the human body responds. This is not a pleasant subject. I got into this through work on Panama when the United States military was supposed to leave Panama, and according to the Panama Canal treaties, was to clean up all hazards to human health and safety before it left. And as we began to investigate what those hazards might be, we discovered a history of testing of chemical weapons in Panama that went back to the 1940s. There was a presence of chemical weapons in Panama beginning in the 1920s. In the 1940s, the U.S. military, together with the Canadians and the British, were very concerned that the Germans and the Japanese might use chemical weapons against the Allied armies. And they felt unprepared. The Japanese had used a mustard agent in China extensively. And so the United States and Great Britain and Canada undertook a series of tests in order to figure out how their equipment and how the human body would respond when we're being exposed to particularly mustard agent and lewisite, which is another chemical agent. And they particularly wanted to see how these things would happen in a tropical environment. Because in taking over the Pacific Islands from the Japanese, the U.S. was losing a lot of men in conventional warfare. And so there were particular advocates within the Army, the Chemical Warfare Service, who thought that chemical weapons would be a more effective weapon. And again, we come back to this question of military efficacy in taking over the Japanese islands. So they set up testing grounds in Panama, in Florida, in Maryland, in Utah, in Australia, in Alberta and Canada, in Portland Downs in England, in India, and in New Guinea, in which there were three different kinds of chemical weapons tests. Some of them were so-called patch tests, in which you just drop a drop of mustard agent on somebody's arm, and partly it's to show the troops what mustard agent can do. And the long-term effects are negligible. The other two kinds of tests were field tests, in which troops would be sent out to an area that had been contaminated by chemical agent in order to see how well they did, how long they held up, how good the impregnated clothing was, how good the gas masks were, etc. And the third kind of test was a gas chamber test, in which a chamber was heated up to a certain temperature or humidity, and then you'd have maybe six guys who were sent in there, and they would pump mustard gas in until they passed out. These were called man-break tests. And the end point of the test was tissue injury. So there's no documented record of guys being killed, although it may have happened. There were at least 4,000 people, troops, who were exposed in chamber tests in the Naval Research Laboratory in Washington, D.C. There was a toxicity laboratory at the University of Chicago. There were also chambers in Australia and in Panama and in Dugway Proving Ground in Utah. The men who were brought into this were told that they would get a 7-day pass or a 3-day pass if they tested summer clothing. And so they would take their pass, and then they would be sent off to the sites where the tests were taking place, and then they would be told what was going to happen. They were also told that, at least during the World War II era, that if they told anyone about these tests, that they would be court-martialed and sent to Leavenworth for long jail sentences. The World War II vets, most of them, did not talk about these tests for 40 years. They did not tell their neighbors, their friends, their doctors, their wives. Until, of course, illnesses began to come up, and they had there was no way of explaining what they were. The military knew, as of 1933, that exposure to mustard agent has long-term effects, health effects, particularly lung diseases, conjunctivitis, and certain kinds of cancers. But this was not part of the medical training manual in World War II. Now, this was before the Nuremberg Code. This was before people knew about the gas chambers that the Nazis were doing. When you tell people today that 4,000 men were put into a gas chamber that was pumped full of mustard gas, the horror, I mean, the horror is the same, but there's a certain kind of disbelief that people have. It's like, isn't this like the Nazis? And it is like the Nazis, in a way, because we were not abiding by what became the Nuremberg Code. In 1953, the Secretary of Defense signed an order for all experimentation, medical experimentation within the military, to follow what was the Nuremberg Code and to require a written informed consent agreement by any soldier who was going to go into any medical experiment. However, it was classified secret. And so researchers who were contracted by the military didn't know about it. Now, in the 1960s, you have a whole other series of tests that happened in the 1950s when people were subjected to LSD. There were some other more controlled tests with chemical agents. In the 1960s, what's coming out now is another series of tests called Project 112, which was part of the overhaul of the military that the Kennedy people undertook. And there were about 50 tests that have been documented, in which either some of them were land-based and some of them were on ships, in which chemical and biological agents or simulants of them, which in some cases were also hazardous to health, were sprayed, and in some cases when people were present, the simulants were sprayed in order to see how they would disperse. This was in a program for offensive use. Today, many of those vets, there's about 5,000 vets who were exposed to those agents, and many of them are also suffering diseases from the long-term effects. More recently, in the Gulf War, in the 1991 Gulf War, on the eve of the Gulf War, the military wanted to use an anti-nerve agent medicine called pyridostigmine bromide, or PB. And this is an investigational drug, or at least was at that time. That is, it was an experimental drug. And it was thought to be effective against one of the nerve agents called Soman. However, it should not be used if someone is going to be exposed to other nerve agents, such as VX or sarin, which it was known that Iraq had at the time. So the DOD strong-armed the FDA into getting a waiver of informed consent rules so that the drug could be administered to all troops going into the war without their consent. The DOD promised that they would give verbal information to the troops about the drug and its risks, which in most cases was not done. So there are about 200,000 troops who took this drug, which is actually part of the nerve agent family and is now thought to be one of the contributing factors to Gulf War illness. Now, in some ways, I think that this presentation should not be in this session. This presentation should be in the session about counter-recruitment of youth. Because the further that you go into this, the more you realize that anybody who joins the military is a slave. And the people who go in, because there is something called the people who have tried to sue the military, the guys who were exposed to gas in chambers tried to sue the military under the Federal Tort Claims Act. And what they came up against is something called the Ferries Doctrine, which is a Supreme Court decision in 1950 that says that the government cannot be sued for negligence by any member of the armed services for something that happened during service in the military if it was incident to service. Incident to service. So that means that if you have been exposed to chemical agent in an immoral experiment by the government, it is incident to service. Now, I want to point out that when General Pinochet was arrested in Britain, the Chilean dictator was arrested in Britain and was going to be tried for crimes against humanity. His defense was that this was part of the government service, that this was something that was part of duty in the government. That is, we're defining service in the government as something that is completely immoral and against the Nuremberg Code. That's what that does. There are some people who are trying to get around that. The people who were exposed in the 1960s are suing individual officials who were from McNamara on down for not releasing their medical records, for a violation of constitutional rights for not releasing medical records. Because a lot of these guys, when they sent off for their medical records, they would get them, but there would be a year missing, which happened to be the year that they were exposed to these agents. There's also legislation that is attempting to at least require a presidential determination before there is a waiver of informed consent rules for exposure to any drugs within the military. But really, the problem is war. Because the only thing that the military is interested in is not the long-term effects. All of these tests, the only thing that they're interested in is acute effects. Whether or not the military is actually monitoring what happens to the guys when they're exposed, as they did during World War II, or if they don't pay any attention and don't keep any records, as was the case for the guys who were forced to take PB during the Gulf War, where they're not monitoring them at all. This is not a medical test. They just don't care. Because all they're interested in is the acute effects. They want, if the guys are exposed to some kind of nerve agent in the war in Iraq, they want them to be able to keep fighting. That's all they care about. So the long-term health that's the issue, is that there is no commitment to the long-term. There's only a commitment to the short-term. It's all about expediency. I think I'm going to end there, and we can take questions. I would really love discussion. One other thing I want to say is that the documents that are exposing what happened during the 1960s with Project 112, we're trying to get them through the Freedom of Information Act. The Vietnam Vets of America have obtained a large number of documents that they are not yet making available because they want to get major media interest, and they want to get congressional hearings. They want to get congressional action. So I personally am trying to get this stuff through the Freedom of Information Act, and I would very much like to find a place in which that can serve as a repository for the public and for veterans to access these documents. I mean, eventually put significant ones on the web as well. But this is just an appeal to any of you who might be able to help in finding a place that could serve as a repository for those kinds of documents that would make them safe, that is, keep them safe, and also make them available to the public. Thanks very much. Thank you.